I always found it suspect when a TV show is set in New York, but there's apparently no people of color.
I'm like, exactly. That's
not true. So when I set this in Los Angeles, I was like, I really want to make sure that I reflect who I see here, or the, you know, the kinds of food that's here. That, you know, I just really wanted to reflect what was reality and not just, you know, what sells, I guess.
Hey there, welcome back to a new episode of Try Reading. I hope you've been reading some amazing books recently, and I hope you're excited to listen to today's episode with the most fabulous guest. Today, I'm joined by the debut author, Jennifer Chen. How are you, Jennifer? How's the book world treating you?
It's good. It's really good. I just signed a bunch of book plates today, actually, for the book. It's really fun because I like getting my book signed when I go to book events. So like, to be able to do that, I was like, oh, this is so fun. Like, I'm always excited to get my book signed. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, I am so honored to have you on the podcast. And for the listeners who don't know Jennifer or about her debut novel, you will love tuning in to this episode. Jennifer is a freelance journalist who has written for print and online, including The New York Times, O, The Oprah Magazine, Real Simple, and Bust. She has an MFA and a BFA in dramatic writing from the New York University's Tisch School of the Arts. She's a proud volunteer for Write Girl, a creative writing and mentoring organization. As for Jennifer's books, she has a short story in the anthology First Year Orientation that released in April 2023, and her debut novel, Artifacts of an X, is forthcoming from Wednesday Books on November 14th, 2023, and I cannot wait. Jennifer, your writing is fantastic, and I am just so honored to be able to learn more about you and your stories.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, thank you for having me on. I'm excited to chat.
Of course. Yeah, I am so excited as well. As I always start the podcast this way, what is your current read?
I just finished, like this morning, The Night in Question by Kathleen Glasgow and Liz Lawson. It's book number 2 in their YA mystery series. The first one was The Agathas, and this is book 2, The Night in Question. So it continues with the same teenage detectives as book 1, and it's fantastic. I love their writing. It's they alternate chapters between the two narrators. So it's just, if you love like Veronica Mars kind of mysteries, it's like the perfect read.
Yeah, that sounds great. And yeah. I know I've heard the name pop up before, but I'm definitely going to have to check that out. Yeah. And yeah, I love that they alternate chapters.
Yeah, it's fun. It's you can tell that they write one character and the other one writes the other character's point of view, but it's a fun mystery.
Yeah. Well, yeah. My current read is your book, Artifacts of an X, and I was so fortunate to receive an ARC in the mail, and it's just so wonderful. I mean, the listeners will hear me talk about it in a little bit and I'll read the description, but I just love the vibes, and it's such a feel-good story. And it's a perfect summer read too, like just this just a light story that involves just, I love the creativity of it too, and you know, just the concept that the main character has of creating this art exhibit hooked me right away when I first heard about the book, and so I'm really, really loving it, and I can't wait to learn even more about it.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you're enjoying it. I loved writing it, so.
Well, I can't wait to hear. Well, I have just a bit of podcast, or one little podcast shout out from a previous guest, and that is Fit for the Gods, which releases on August 1st. And Fit for the Gods is an anthology of short stories all inspired by Greek mythology. And Mia P. Monansala, who was on episode 7, has a short story in this anthology, and I cannot wait to read it. If you know me, you'll know I'm the biggest Mia fan. So listeners, stay tuned. It sounds so fantastic, all of the different stories. But Mia specifically is a Greek mythology-inspired detective agency. So I am very excited for that. And as for any publisher book mail shout-outs, I just have a thank you to Simon and Schuster for an arc of By Any Other Name by Aaron Cotter, which is releasing on October 10th. And it is a story full of historical queer romance, assassins, Shakespeare vibes. And if that sounds of any interest to you listeners, you should definitely go check it out. And another thank you to Little Brown for an arc of So Let Them Burn by Camilla Cole. This book releases on January 16th, 2024. And the three words I have for you to pitch this novel are sapphics, sisters, and dragon riders. Aren't you hooked? I was. And last but not least, a big thank you to Mobius Theory for a copy of Null Space Magazine. As I mentioned in the last episode, I was really lucky to be a part of the editorial team on this magazine, and it's full of art and artists and creativity and magic. And so you can get the first issue and learn more at nullspacemag.com. But those are all the shout-outs I have for today. My first question for you, Jennifer, is have you always loved books and reading?
I was a shy kid. I still probably would identify that way as an adult. And I loved reading because it was a great way to like learn about other people without talking to them. I mean, I can't tell you how many books I felt like they were, I got to learn about other people through books. And I grew up in like in a small suburb in New Jersey, so reading was my sort of escape when I grew up there.
Yeah. And there's obviously so many different genres and so many different escapes and worlds to fall into. But I love that it's still with you and that you still love reading. And
I do.
have you always wanted to publish a book?
I have. I'd say I started writing when I was a kid. My second grade teacher, because I was pretty quiet, she had noticed that I was writing a lot. And so she left me a note one day, because I was shy and didn't like talking to my teacher. But she left me a note one day and she's like, "I really like your stories. Keep writing." And I hadn't really thought about it. I think I was just kind of like, doing it in class and stuff. And so I kept writing and writing. Always wanted to, I've loved books. I loved going to bookstores. I loved going to the library. So that's always been a dream since I was, I don't even know how old, maybe a teenager. And even still now, it's like still a huge dream. Like the fact that I get like the book is behind you on the shelf. I'm like, it's so crazy. It's so cool. It's cool.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And I know, I bet, younger Jennifer is just like jumping for joy. And
Yeah.
gosh, I mean, what is it, 4 months to release now? I think November.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think it'll hit me until, because I've gotten arcs and stuff, but I think when I actually see it in the store that's an actual hardcover copy, it'll hit me that it's real, because each step of the way I'm like, oh, this is cool, this is cool. And then I'm like, oh my God, it's actually happening. And yeah, it's great.
Well, that's so exciting. For the listeners who don't know, this book is a contemporary young adult novel, and it has an Asian main character and an Asian love interest. And, BIPOC contemporary novels haven't always been as popular, and obviously they're becoming more and more seen, but we could use many, many more. So, for you as a writer of this story, can you remember the first young adult contemporary novel you read that had BIPOC representation?
I was going to name two. So I
Yeah.
remember reading Jenny Han's The Summer I Turned Pretty, but and then To All the Boys, that series. That was the first time I saw Asian characters in more modern young adult. And then The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas was one of the first books that I read, and I felt just impacted by it, and it was just so memorable to me. So I've been trying to publish a book for a very long time, and so when I initially had my first literary agent, my books just didn't sell. And at the time, I think Asian American main characters were just not mainstream enough for a traditional publisher to take a chance on. So I feel so grateful that there were other authors who kind of came and paved the way. Because I think without Jenny Han, a lot of Asian American authors wouldn't be where we are today.
Yeah, well, it's so true, and it is so wonderful to see that there's these stories being published, and also by, bigger publishers too, and not just, so is, just keep them coming. So, so obviously you did mention reading Jenny Han's books and Angie Thomas. But when you sat down to write a novel, was YA contemporary the first genre that came to mind?
I've been writing YA for, I guess, 10 years now. Those books didn't sell. The book that my agent and I actually went on submission with last June 2020. We were going to go on submission in March 2020. And then when the pandemic happened, we were like, let's hold. We didn't know how long it was going to be. So my agent was like, let's hold till the summer. Let's just see what, not realizing that, it was going to last for a lot longer. And that book was young adult contemporary, but with a sort of more darker book. It deals with the school shooting. And I just remember a lot of editors responding like, this is great writing. I have no idea what to do with this book. It's just not the time. Some people passed because they just didn't want to read anything serious, which in June 2020 totally makes sense. I mean, the world was
Of
sort of on
course.
literal fire. So I felt like, okay, I didn't take it as a knock on my writing. It's more of just like, this is not the right book right now. And then I wrote Artifacts, if I'm remembering correctly. I think I started in September and finished in December, September 2020 to December 2020. And I had always thought of myself as a serious writer. And this was the first sort of like rom-com idea I had that I wrote and ran with. So it actually wasn't the first young adult contemporary I've written. It's just the first I've sold.
And very interesting journey too, because of COVID and this pause that was put on anything. But it's so exciting to see that Artifacts of an X will be published, and yeah, and such a fun story. And I can see so many readers enjoying this, and I just can't wait. But since today the main topic is Artifacts of an X, I am just going to briefly read the description. But Artifacts of an X, as I said, which releases on November 14th, follows Chloe Chang, who gets dumped via USPS after moving across the country from New York City to Los Angeles, and her first instinct is to throw away her box of memories in the garbage. Instead, she starts buying up other teenagers' breakup boxes to create an art exhibit. Which that is what hooked me when I first read the description. And I mean, that sounds like so fun and so exciting. So, anyways, opening night is great until she spots Daniel Kwok filming his best friend's reaction to his ex's box. Daniel insists the video is for his short documentary, but Chloe demands he stop filming because she promised her contributors the utmost privacy for their mementos. Chloe and Daniel's intense discussion launches their creative partnership and friendship. Choosing to go for what she wants, Chloe asks Daniel out, but he says no. Daniel Kwok is always the guy who makes the girl he's dating realize they want to get back with their ex. She insists she's over her ex, but when he shows up unexpectedly with his new girlfriend, it turns out Daniel was right. She isn't ready for a new relationship. To create the exhibit she's always wanted, Chloe needs to go back to the basics, learn to work with artists in a more collaborative way, and discover what love can be. Only then will she convince Daniel she's ready for something more than a rebound. I said before that I was so lucky to receive an ARC, and I am just loving this book so much. And
Oh,
it's
great.
just so fun and so creative. And as I said, the synopsis hooked me right away. And I just, yeah, I love also, an artsy and creative main character. And to be able to turn something, what's the right word? Just not fun in your life and something that's bringing you down, like a breakup, but to turn it into something so creative, is just so fun and such a unique idea. And so, yeah, I was just so excited to read it, and I'm loving it so much, and I can't wait for others to be able to read this book. But I do have to ask, what was the inspiration?
Two things actually. So years ago, my twins were born in 2016, and so a friend of mine used to organize these like events where we would go to and like hang out with other friends, and she had organized this event at a museum. And I literally had an hour to go because I was like, I have to feed my children. And it just was this sort of crazy rush to get there. But when I got there, it was an exhibit of all people sending in their breakup objects. And then there was a little plaque that's kind of described the relationship or the object. And it would range from like a pen to somebody like crushed up their wedding dress and put it in a jar. I mean, it was really unusual objects. People had cassette tapes. I mean, just different things that they had sent in. And when I stood there, I was like, this is so cool. And I think it'd be really cool if like a teenager did this, because I feel like the first time experiencing a breakup has to be memorable. And but I left the exhibit, and my kids at this point were, my twins were 12 weeks old, and I was like, I have no idea when I'm going to write that book. Just no idea. So
Right.
I'll just put that down, that idea down, and we'll think about it later. Then when it came to 2020, I at the start of the pandemic, I'm a journalist, and I had spent a lot of the year writing about anti-Asian hate, and tracking crimes and racist incidents, and writing about it for Oprah Daily and getting interviewed about it for NPR Weekend Edition. And that was my day job, and I felt like it was super important, and it was also super draining. It was like it started to feel like there were no good things happening. And especially to see people who look like me get hurt physically, and mainly women, elderly people. And I was kind of getting in my head of like, I can't keep reading these stories. It's so depressing.
Yeah.
And that's where Artifacts was born, because I actually, while the other book was on submission, I was like, I need to write something fun. I need to write something that's not like serious and isn't of the news right now. And so I wrote Artifacts at night. During the day, I was doing my journalism and turning in pieces. And my kids were home because they were four at the time, so there was no daycare that would, you know, so it was just sort of the only thing. Because we were all trapped inside and stuff, it was like this fun place I could go to. And I went back to that idea of the Museum of Broken Relationships, and I thought it would be so fun to like kind of write about Asian American teens falling in love and nothing bad happens to them, other than, you know, they obviously have, you know, breakups and heartache and stuff, but it's a sweet world. And that's what I wanted to create when I sat down to write this. So it was really born out of thinking about this idea years ago, but then finding sort of this mental outlet for what was going on in the world.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I just love that even that exhibit was a real thing that you got to go see, and that just sounds so cool. But also, it is so true. Like, there are so many stories of just, in the news and articles, and that can just, of course, and I can only imagine as the writer of these articles, the stories being draining. And yeah, and like you said, just to have this world where it's just happy, and the biggest struggle is falling in love, and it's because in the big scheme of things, like, I'm sure many people would just love, like, oh, the biggest struggle is picking what book to read, or falling in love, or choosing what to have for breakfast, or and that's also, going back to what you originally talked about when with your love for reading and books, this escapism. So this way to go into this world where everything just feels good. So thank you for sharing that inspiration.
I also at the same time started really getting into reading romance, adult and young adult, and it was my mental escape. I hadn't really read romance in a long time, and then I just couldn't stop reading them in the pandemic, and so that sort of influenced this book as well. So
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, how long would you say it took you to write the first draft?
oh gosh. If I'm remembering correctly, I think I started working on it in September, but actually writing it in October through December 2020. That was a really like first pass. But yeah, I think about 3 to 4 months for this first draft. I will say, like other books I've written, I never wrote that fast before, but this was sort of a book that, like I said, was my mental escape. So it was really fun to write. So it didn't
Yeah.
feel hard. So it was one of those things that I think it just came out of me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. During this process of drafting, were you more of a pantser or a plotter?
Definitely a plotter. And I say that because I used to be a pantser, and then other books I've written, it took me years to rewrite because they were just in such a mess. And even the book that I signed with my agent, we spent months revising. And it's this book, like I basically took a lot of classes, read a lot of books on writing craft novels and things like that. And I used all of that knowledge to write Artifacts. Like I really plotted it. I did. I recommend this book called Story Genius by Lisa Kron. And that really helped me understand how to plot, but also write an emotional story that you feel for the characters and you understand why they do what they do. And to be honest, Chloe is a little bit me. I used a lot of that planner stuff was just like, that's how I live my life. So it was sort of an easy way to get into that character's head.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I totally understand being a plotter and it makes sense, especially with something you feel good about in a story, also that you said you wrote it so quickly and well, during this process, I know on your website you have like sort of like your favorite books currently, TV shows, artists, music artists. Did you create a writing playlist while writing this book? And if so, could you share some of the artists that were on that playlist?
Yes, I took a writing class called How to Fast Draft. It's by an author, Lindsay Yeager, and in it she describes like create a writing playlist that you listen to only when you're writing the book, and that way kind of mentally gets you in the headspace. And so what I decided to do with that was like I asked people what were their favorite breakup songs, and I took all of those, and it was a great list. But some of them I didn't know and some of them I did, but and I put my own favorites in there, and I just thought it would really get me in the headspace of like what it's like to go through a breakup and the sort of different feelings in it. So I have Beyonce, Mariah Carey, Dua Lipa, all sorts of breakup songs. Like there's a Frank Ocean song that a friend recommended, and when I listened to that, I was like, this is a heartbreak song. Like it just helped writing the book and getting sort of in that headspace for it.
Yeah, and of course everybody has different music tastes, so seeing these different, breakup songs and would you ever release the playlist once the book releases or
It's on my website. It's
oh.
a I have it there so that you can listen to like a little preview of it, but it's also on Tidal as a Tidal, the music service. I used to use Spotify, but I switched over to Tidal. But yeah, you can listen to it. And the book that I'm working on, book number two that I'm working on, I'll make that public when the book is public.
Yeah. Well, that's so fun. And I love that advice of having a playlist that you listen to specifically when you write, because it is so true about just getting in that mental headspace of writing. And, so much of stories is also just about the vibes and the good feelings of the book. And so, well, on TikTok, you shared how you draft your books as you've been drafting book two, and the device you use is called a Kobo. And could you talk a bit about how you decided to use that writing technique? Because I had never heard of it, but I found it so cool.
Well, I as I said, I've written lots of books that didn't get anywhere. And I think with Artifacts Onwards, I've just learned a new system that works for me, and I really organized it because I realized I love organizing. I love to plan. So why don't I use those skills to help me draft better? And so the thing that I shared on TikTok was that when I'm done with a draft, I import it into my Kobo, which is an e-reader, and I import it through Dropbox, but they also have a Google Drive option. And then the Kobo that I have comes with a stylus. I think it's the Ellipsa is the I don't know what do you call it, the addition of it, but I can write with a little stylus pen. And so I'll read it like a reader, and then I'll make notes on it, on the actual, like, using the stylus. And if there's anything that's longer notes that I can't just fit on a little screen, I have a separate notebook, and I kind of created a system of like numbers so that I could find the note in the book. And why I decided to do that was I realized when I would try to revise in the past, I would just go in and try to take care of everything. And I realized it was really hard to read a whole book in one sitting versus this option. I'm reading it sort of like a reader. And so what I pick up on is like, oh, this section's kind of boring, or oh, I said this 3 times already, or this doesn't make sense, or oops, I like they were saying that they were meeting up for breakfast, and but now it's dinner. You know, like I get to notice things more, and but I don't touch it. And I think that's the important thing, because I think if I were revising it in the actual document, I would just get caught up in trying to fix all those little things. And when I do it on the Kobo, I'm like, I'm just reading as a reader to see the places that I want to fix that don't feel like they're quite there yet. And I just find it really helpful, because I think it's really hard to revise a book. It's really,
Yeah.
really hard, because you can get really lost in details. And mine's, you know, YA contemporary. It's not like I'm doing like 100K, 100K, 1,000 word novels. It's not that long, but it's still a lot. You can get lost in a lot of it. So I feel like the Kobo really helped me not touch it, but read it. I think that's the most important thing I learned in from writing classes, was to read your book like a reader would. And since I read so much, I realize I'm like, you know, when I read a book that I don't like, I'm like, oh, why don't I like this? And it's like, there's
Yeah.
certain things I don't like. So when I'm reading my own stuff, I like having it on an e-reader, because I'm not judging it. I'm on the writing, I'm judging it as a reader. And I think that's really important, because you know, I mean, there's certain things that I don't like in books that other people love, but for my own books, I'm like, okay, what is boring to me? Or I can just tell that certain parts, I'm like, this is just like wasting time. Or there's sections where I'm like, oh, I didn't give enough information, so it feels sort of like lacking. That's what's helpful about using that method.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's so true to read it as a reader and especially on an e-reader. And yeah, because I can just imagine the difference of like trying to just revise and revise as like a document, or just like it feels like you're reading a book. And yeah, and you know, you're still gonna, you know, judge it in a, you know, in a writer way or a reader way. And yeah, but I had never seen anybody else use that technique. And then I saw your video and I was like, that is really cool.
Yeah,
And
it's really helpful, I think.
absolutely. Well, earlier, I had asked the question about, you know, what were the first or what was the first BIPOC contemporary young adult novel you had read? And as I was saying, you know, obviously. And as you had said as well, you know, there's more and more stories now with BIPOC representation, which is really wonderful. But sadly, it, you know, these stories can still be marginalized within the publishing world. And so, for you, what was most important about making your story diverse?
With artifacts, I really wanted to reflect Los Angeles. It's a very diverse city in terms of who lives here, but also food and what there is to do. And I think it was really important to me to capture the what I know of Los Angeles and the kinds of people I've met here. But it's also like, I, as growing up as an Asian American, like the only diversity I ever saw was honestly like the Babysitter's Club, with Claudia. And and I loved her, but she was pretty much the only character I saw who looked like me for
Right.
years, and even TV shows, and stuff like that. So, I always found it suspect when a TV show is set in New York, but there's apparently no people of color, because I'm like, that's not
Exactly.
true. So when I set this in Los Angeles, I was like, I really want to make sure that I reflect who I see here, or the kinds of food that's here, that, I just really wanted to reflect what was reality and not just, what sells, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so true. I used to live in New York, and it's yeah, it is so true that like it's kind of hard to believe that there would be just only white characters in a story set in New York City. But yes, but I love that, you wanted to showcase that, and it is so wonderful just to see that more and more stories are being published. And yeah, and I think it was Johnny Garcevia who has written Ander and Santi Were Here and 1500 Miles from the Sun, and they were talking about BIPOC representation in books and how you have all these Cinderella retellings and you have all these stories, and but until we have those same retellings with BIPOC characters, then it's enough. But just like I said, yeah, keep those books coming, because those stories obviously are so important. And yeah, but so I love that. So thank you for sharing that. This cover of the book is so wonderful, and Lenny Kaufman is the artist, and oh my gosh, I was just like all even like the little details, like the Metro card and everything. So did you have any say in this gorgeous, gorgeous cover?
It's amazing. And so before they even got to the cover, they had asked me, like, had a little questionnaire of who I thought the main characters looked like, what other book covers I really liked. And so I made a Pinterest board just for them. It's a private Pinterest board, but it was sort of like, here are the characters I think they look like, and here's book covers I love. And Lenny's actually happened to be quite a few of them. Her covers I really liked. And so they emailed me a concept that was not this final version that you see, but sort of the idea of like the heart at the top and these two characters and then the objects around them. And I said I loved it. I loved having, I personally as a reader, when I see objects on a cover and then I read about it, like, when you find out, I'm like, oh, the cat that's on the cover. I really like that. So I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then they had said, do you, we're gonna go approach Lenny. Are you good with that? And I was like, I love her stuff. Great. She did an initial sketch, kind of like, not pencil because it's not done in pencil, but sort of that like etching style.
Yeah.
And she sent that. And so the only changes we really made were to the objects, because I think I wanted to make clear that that hat that's on the cover is knit by someone who's not a really good knitter. I wanted it to look kind of bad. And so she was trying to, make it look, she had it really neat. And I was like, I want her, it to be the hat that Chloe knits for Jake, and it's misshapen and not great. So she kind of fixed that. And there were certain things that I'm like, oh, it's not clear to me. Like, I know as the writer what that's supposed to be, but I don't think it's clear visually. So we just changed a few of the objects. But Lenny did like another sketch, and I was like, this is great. And then she just went in and filled it in with color, and then they showed it to me. So I had say, and I definitely gave them suggestions, but ultimately, they chose what they chose. But I love it. And I've gotten some feedback from reviewers who were like, I picked this because I liked the cover. Like, I didn't know anything about the book. I just really liked the cover. And I'm like, I love the cover. Pink is my favorite color in the world. So I was like, so excited that it was pink. I mean, it's, you can't not notice it. And I think that's what made me
Right.
excited about it.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And yeah, it's so true about noticing, the little objects on the cover and then reading about them. And there's not so many books recently that I can remember reading, but like even Edward Underhill's next book, This Day Changes Everything, has little objects on the cover. So after reading this and seeing them in the story, I was like, okay, I need to find like another book that I can read that will have the objects in the book. And it is such an exciting thing. But yeah, because then once you start reading, the details on the cover just make even more sense and add to the story. But yeah, it's so much fun. And it does, the pink stands out, and so it's, yeah, it's really fun and pretty. The title is, of course, so fun too. And did you have other title options before this one?
I considered calling it Heart Effects, named after the exhibit that Chloe creates, but I thought it might be too confusing on a cover. Like, if you didn't know what it meant, I was like, I think it might be too confusing visually. Like, what is that? And so, what I liked about Artifacts of an X, that was sort of my other title I had, was that I'm like, it has art in the title, but it also has the artifacts, which are objects. And I just thought it kind of captured what the book was about in those words. So initially I was thinking Heart Effects, but I thought it would look too cutesy on the cover. Like, you wouldn't initially get it. You'd be like, what does that mean? Like, so I went with this as the title, and I'm really happy with it because I like the way on the cover Chloe and Daniel are standing on the X part, and I just think it's just so cute the way that they designed it that way.
Yeah, it is so wonderful. And yeah, just yeah, like you said, the details of how they're standing on the letters. And well, I, had mentioned earlier, and we were talking about, there's about 4 months to release. And is there something you're most excited for when this book releases?
I think the number one thing is just seeing it in a bookstore. I as a kid, I would any money that I got, any allowance money or Lunar New Year money I got, I would just spend on books. And my aunt used to joke that she was like, we give each of the kids like money to go to the mall and just like run around, and all my cousins would buy candy and whatnot and toys, and I was straight to the bookstore. And so for me, like, I had gone to Walden Books in the mall, which doesn't exist anymore, but just to buy a new book was like so exciting. And to have that, like, new book, and to have my book in a bookstore, just that's so exciting to me. And to be able to walk in and see it somewhere, I think that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, just like bringing that inner child and that younger Jennifer's bringing that joy of, like, yeah, just those memories, like you had said, of going into a bookstore. And yeah, well, what do you hope once readers, whether it's ARC readers or readers once they read the book when it comes out, what do you hope they will take away from reading Artifacts of an X?
That's a great question. I created these characters because I wanted to have two really creative people help each other become even more open to creativity and inspiration, which is why I made Daniel a filmmaker. I really wanted him to have sort of a view of, this is serious filmmaking and documentary is this, and that Chloe comes in and sort of brings in the heart to his otherwise very drab anti-Valentine's Day documentary. And I wanted him to help her see what it's like to work collaboratively with other people. And I really wanted him to be sort of the voice of the neighborhood and for her to fall in love with Los Angeles through him. And so I'm hoping that when readers read it, they reconnect with their own creativity, because that was Chloe, like, her job, her future job that she wants. I've always loved art. I'm terrible at making art. I'm not an artist in that sense. So it was sort of a fun way for me to be an art curator through her. And I just want people to come away with like being excited about creativity and what like it's you don't have to be an artist to appreciate and enjoy and do something creative.
Absolutely. Well, that is such a wonderful takeaway. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, I think, well, obviously, as I had said, that's sort of the biggest thing that jumped out at me when I first read the synopsis was the creativity of it and of her exhibit. And but yes, there's so much creativity and just joyfulness in this story. Well, if you could turn Artifacts of an X into any form of media other than a TV show or a movie, what would that be?
Yes. I think it would be cool if it were an art exhibit. I mean, I know that's like to have it sort of a fictionalized version of the art exhibit, and like using the stories from the book and stuff. But I love going to museums. And when I first saw the Museum of Broken Relationships, it was the first time I found anything that was like not by this fancy artist per se. You know, it was by people, and I think that was really cool. So I would want to turn it into a art gallery exhibit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I would love to see that. Well, I mean, hey, if anyone's listening that curates art exhibits, Artifacts of an X. Yeah. That would be so exciting. And yeah, just finding ways to creatively produce parts of the story into art and putting them in an exhibit. That would look so cool. Yeah. And it's true because you often think of like art exhibits of like, of these well-established artists, or this, very, grandiose art, and but like the one you had gone to, it was people with objects from their life, and yeah. Well, as for now, this question does involve TV shows or movies, but what movies, TV shows, podcasts, any sort of media like that would you recommend to readers after they read Artifacts of an X?
I will reference a TV show that I used to write this book, and it's going to go back to Babysitter's Club. I loved the Babysitter's Club Netflix series. I thought it was beautifully done. I thought it was so the way they modernized these older books. But in particular, I looked at Claudia and the Sad Goodbye, which to me is like one of my favorite books, but also a sad book, obviously, because her grandmother passes away. But that episode, I rewatched it and I sat down. And the reason I rewatched it was I wanted to work on the relationship of the grandmother. When I sold the book, my editor, Vicky, said, "I really love the family. Can we have more family?" And I said, "Okay, let me think about like what I could do." And so I rewatched that Claudia and the Sad Goodbye episode, and I loved the way that it was structured. So I just ended up taking notes, and I thought, okay, this is the emotional arc I want to have in my book with Chloe and her grandmother. And so that's when I included the recipe that the grandmother can't remember and Chloe's trying to figure out. That storyline came out of reading watching Babysitter's Club. So I'd highly recommend anyone watch that series. It's only two seasons. They canceled it in the second season, which is a shame, but I don't know how to explain that. It captured what I loved from my childhood, but also made it better somehow. And it modernized a lot of issues in the book that were always there, but kind of more like what's happening now versus the 80s when it happened, when they were written.
Yeah, it is such a good show. And I was like growing up in the time where they were turning the novels into graphic novels. And so that's how like I first consumed the stories. But then it was just such an exciting thing when the show was announced. And it is such a bummer it was canceled because it was like everybody was so good and they all played the characters so well. Well, do you have any others? You're more than welcome to share more than one if you would like any other.
Gosh, I'm trying to think. Honestly, I would say the music that I listened to really helped, and when the playlist that we were talking about earlier, I just found it like that was the mood that I wanted to go for was the kind of songs you'd listen to after somebody broke your heart to like feel better. That's what I would say. Like the playlist that I have on my website, I'd recommend that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, those are both really great. And yes, now I'm going to have to go listen to that playlist for sure. Well, to close out this episode, what would be your advice for people who want to write stories with BIPOC main characters?
My main advice would be to keep writing, to find your community of people who support you, find agents and editors who stand by your characters. Like I said, I've been writing books for 10 years, and this is the first one that sold. And I think what really was hard trying to sell books 10 years ago was there weren't, you never, you didn't have characters who looked like me on covers in the young adult space, and because they quote unquote didn't sell. So I just kind of waited it out. Like I kept writing, I kept writing, I kept taking classes, reading books on craft. Every author that I love, I'd listen to them talk about their writing process and take some of their ideas. It was sort of me trying to like keep myself going when I also knew like the industry wasn't ready for. I don't think Artifacts would have sold back 10 years ago. I just think that editors would be like, oh, it's a great story, but I don't know. Versus now, like my agent has been so supportive. Katie, like I asked her for book two. I'm also writing Asian characters, and I was like, am I doing it too much? And she's like, Jed, never, nobody ever questions that with white characters. Like,
Exactly.
don't question it. And I was like, you're right. Like, I think I started to get in my head that I'm like, oh, maybe I should include different ethnicities. And she's like, no one thinks that. No one thinks about that. So you shouldn't have to worry about it. And with my editor, she's just been so like, we got a sensitivity reader for both Daniel's character, who is Korean, and for Jake, who is Black. And that was super helpful because, some editors might be like, why do you need sensitivity readers? Like Daniel's Asian. Like, and but to me, I'm like, I know Koreans, but I'm not Korean. So there's certain traditions and cultures and things and language that I don't know. But Vicky was completely on board. We got a great sensitivity reader, and she really helped me kind of fine-tune a lot of the Korean culture aspects. So I just think finding that those right people who like understand that it's important and understand why authentic representation is important, but also to keep writing, because I would have quit years ago had it not been for my writer friends and other people in my life who were like, just hang in there. And I would have never predicted this 10 years ago. I just wouldn't have, like, seeing Jenny. I think when Jenny Han's books got adapted for Netflix and that sort of exploded, and everyone, I was like, if that hadn't happened, I don't know if my book would be out per se. And so I feel like 10 years ago, I don't think this book would have made a splash the way it does now.
Jennifer, what a fantastic answer. Thank you so much for sharing that. I love just throughout the stories you told today, just also the persistence you had too, just with like not getting, your creativity shoved aside because, oh, like you said, this quote unquote doesn't sell. But I just loved all of these stories so much, and especially this advice. And with that, I think we have found the end of this episode. But I want to thank the talented, creative, and fantastic Jennifer Chen for joining me today. I just had the biggest pleasure chatting with you today. So thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much. Your last question was so helpful, and I hope that future authors, future writers take into consideration they should just keep writing, even if they get rejected, even if people don't think their stories are important. They are, all the stories are important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, where can the listeners find you?
My website's jchenwriter.com. My user handle on Twitter, TikTok, and Insta is jchenwriter. So that's where you can find me there. But yeah, I'm mostly on Instagram and Twitter, and starting more, TikToks.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's great. Well, listeners, go check out Jennifer, and yes, you'll probably also get some really cool writing advice like I did with the Kobo and all of that. But do you have anything upcoming or current that you want to shout out or promote aside from the release of Artifacts of an Axe, of course?
I would probably just plug my newsletter, which is Joyride, and I started it in the pandemic because I wanted to find joyful things. And so what I did was I collect like my favorite TV shows or books and just my recommendations of things that brought me joy. I launched it in, I think, August 2020. But it's the thing that I love doing, and I send it out once a month. But what's been really nice is I write a little pep talk at the beginning for anybody who's reading it. And so to have readers write to me of like, thank you, I needed to hear this today, like that kind of stuff, it makes me happy that I'm be able to spread joy through my newsletter, and that in the world of all this like bad news, there's some good stuff too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And so thank you for plugging that. Definitely. Yeah. Listeners, go check that out. But thank you everyone for listening to today's episode of Try Reading. Don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast. And if you like, you can write a review or rate the show. That way other book lovers can find these amazing stories and people. You can follow Try Reading on Instagram at Try Reading Podcast and on Twitter at Try Reading 2022. As always, you can find this show wherever you get your podcasts, and a new episode drops every other Friday. You can buy books by the Try Reading authors through the bookshop.org link in the Try Reading link tree below. And please go pre-order Jennifer's novel or add it on Goodreads, request it at your library, whatever you choose to do. It is such a great story and not to be missed. And once again, Jennifer, thank you so much for taking the time to just bring your wonderful energy and yourself onto today's episode. I just so enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me.